good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
Film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, film talk show here on WFYI HD to the point, WFYI.org. Show is available as a podcast and available through iTunes. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Behind the board, a man who I have a bet with.
That's right.
Later on in the show, Mr. Kobe Slagle.
Mm-hmm.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
And the gentleman from the Film Yap are here. New, actually not new, but recent published author Christopher Lloyd, wearing shorts. It's your inner Florida. Yep. Welcome. And the man who got the coolest interview of the week, Joe Shearer.
Yes, hello.
We'll get to those in just a little bit. If you have a question or comment, again, msocey at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Well, let's mention the films that did open this week. We have 127 Hours, which we'll get to in a moment. Fair Game. No, it's not a remake of the Cindy Crawford action film, although it would be kind of cool since they have Naomi Watts and Sean Penn this time around. It'd be far better, I think. And we also have the Next 3 Days, a film written and directed by Paul Haggis that apparently is not going to beat you over the head with a message this time around. Hopefully, we'll see. But there was an interview with Russell Crowe on Charlie Rose last night. It was very good, very good. He didn't throw a telephone at Charlie, so that's even better. We also have the Dark Carnival Film Festival, which is going on down in Bloomington. If you go to darkcarnivalfilmfest.com. And, of course, the IMA Museum has a Mexican double feature at the Toby tonight. But opening up in theaters now, yes, there's that big, I think you put it on Facebook, Chris, some kid doing magical stuff opening this week.
Fighting some ugly snake guy.
It looks a lot like the dude in Schindler's List. But we'll get to that in a little bit. We're going to get to actually a film that I think a lot of people in our circles, doughy white guys with glasses and Gina, have been looking forward to. It's the new film from Danny Boyle, 127 Hours, starring James Franco and a rock. Not The Rock, not Dwayne Johnson.
No, that's next week.
Now, if he was stuck to Dwayne Johnson, that would be stuck on you, I think. And that movie's already been made. So, but here's some audio from 127 Hours.
There must be some freaking chemical in your brain. Just different from animals.
Makes us all the same.
Hey, you lost? I'm a guide. What do you say?
Well, the guidebook says that the route's through here. I know a better way.
Oh, you have to remember that everything will be okay.
Oh, my God! Aaron!
Yeah.
You liked him.
I don't think we figured in his day at all.
Kristen! Help! Megan!
Help! It's all you.
Danny Boyle, of course, got an Oscar last year for Slumdog Millionaire. And even when a film is not good, at least there is some, I have to give him points for ambition. I think, of course, of A Life Less Ordinary and The Beach. But why do you laugh? It's true. Am I wrong?
I'm laughing at something else that's going to happen later.
Great. Wow. I'll continue on then.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep.
But yeah, obviously, Trainspotting, Millions, even Sunshine, which I still need to watch. I've only watched bits and pieces of it from start to finish.
28 Days Later.
28 Days Later. That's right. You saw Sunshine.
Oh, my goodness.
Of all the Danny Boyle films, that's the one you've seen?
I don't know who Danny Boyle is.
The director.
Was that the one with Ralph Fiennes?
No. That's
this was the space.
The space movie. Sunshine. No, not the Hungarian film. Well, that's good. I like
that. That's a really good movie.
Yeah. Which one? The Hungarian one or the space one?
The Hungarian one.
Okay, yes. You've seen the space one.
Yeah, I liked it.
Wow. Go for it. You were one of the nine people who saw it when it came in theater, when it arrived in theaters.
Yeah.
The Danny Boyle Sunshine.
But the point is, I guess, you have to give him points for sticking and being a visionary director. And as we were kind of joking off air about the trailer, doesn't really give you a whole heck of a lot. It doesn't really set you up for what's going to be pretty much a one-man show.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember I was a little dubious about this movie when I first saw the trailers because the trailers are highly misleading. I mean, even just what we heard there.
You got the first 20 minutes, basically.
Yeah, or even that. I mean, it sounds like, oh, here's this really charming guy who meets some girls and has some fun, but then something bad happens to him.
Something really bad happens to him.
In fact, you know, I mean, the whole segment with the girls, that is literally all happens before the title comes up, you know, 127 hours.
Which was really funny, actually. Yeah. I hate to admit it, but as soon as that moment happens and then the title came up, there was a
there's plenty of black humor with Mr. Boyle.
Yes, he likes that, and we like him for doing, and I know it's interesting to with the success, and I know a lot of people didn't think Slumdog was going to be the monumental hit that it was, but he could have easily gone in any different type of direction, but I just wanted to see Danny Boyle go, okay, guy stuck to a rock.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the film, but it is so amazingly well done.
Yeah.
Wow. I just got done seeing it this afternoon. I was about an hour and a half ago is when I finished watching it, and I was kind of short of breath after watching it. For those who don't know, and it's not really a spoiler alert because this one's actually based on a true story that I care about. The dude cuts his own arm off, and guess what? Danny Boyle's not afraid to show you.
Yeah, there's been reports of people actually like getting physically ill in theaters, which I don't know why. I mean, it's very frank, it's very gruesome, but I mean, if you're watching any of the harder R-rated horror films that have come out in the last few years, it's nothing worse than that.
That's true. I have now a small list of what looks like torture porn moments in non-torture porn films, like Lars von Trier's Antichrist and The Three Burials of Mikita's Estrada, and now we have this one.
Yeah.
Big kudos to James Franco. Here's a guy, after the success of playing James Dean, got stuck in male ingenue hell in a bunch of really dull films.
Yeah.
And the guy is not let up between, I think he's in college or grad school, doing stuff like Pineapple Express, doing films like Milk, doing a damn soap opera,
yeah,
and now doing this. The guy's constantly working, and he's so good in this, and hopefully he's going to get even more recognition for this than he already has with his career.
Yeah, I think Oscar nomination, almost a certainty at this point. I mean, you know, what else is out there? I hear Colin Firth in King's Speech is really good, but I can't think of too many others that top this year. And it is a really good performance for him because he has been that guy for 10 years. People have been saying he is going to be the next big star, and yet somehow things have just never really lined up for
Annapolis,
him.
City by the Sea,
Tristan and Isolde.
Flyboys.
Yeah, but he's done some good stuff in there, some good roles, you know, when he got good parts, but they tended to be in smaller movies that not too many people saw.
Right.
You know, don't know, you know, I would say, I don't know how many people are going to go see this movie, but then, you know, I wouldn't have said very many people would go see Slumdog Millionaire, which was, you know, in addition to being a critical hit, people forget, was a huge box office hit.
Yeah, I think when word gets out about the cutting, literally of the cutting, that's going to turn some people off. When it comes to also with Danny Boyle, there's enough of a, it's not too overly flashy. It could have been a lot flashier. It could have been a lot more surreal. There's moments where he's filming himself, which are actually, I think I was watching it, and I thought, that's the clip they're going to use in the Academy Awards, is him talking to that. But there's also moments where he kind of flashes back, and he kind of imagines what could have been. You know, I think, of course, of him thinking of the Gatorade bottle that's stuck in his car.
Yeah, that was a great moment.
But there's just enough of those that it's not showing off, and it adds to this guy's dilemma, stuck to a rock.
Yeah, we should mention, you know, this is based on the real guy, Aaron Ralston's book that he wrote, Between a Rock and a Hard Place, which was, I believe, a New York Times bestseller.
Yep. A Rock, not E Rock.
A Rock.
Sorry. you said it fine.
And, you know, I sort of want to, you know, since I admit I came to this movie somewhat biased, you know, when I read about these stories about, you know, guys who climb mountains and get stuck in a bad spot and do things that are heroic, I have to say, you know, my mind was always like, well, so what? You know, you risk your life for, you know, for just for the adrenaline high, and then when you manage to pull it back out of the fire, you know, are we really supposed to cheer for that? You know, it's like, you know, guy who sets his own house on fire and then puts it out. We're supposed to cheer him, not, you know, for putting it out, even though he was an arsonist. But this movie really sort of changed me, you know, not only how I thought about, you know, guys like Aaron Ralston, but about, you know, this sort of universal human spirit. And that sounds so trite and cliche, but it really is what this movie is about. It's not about one extraordinary man doing something extraordinary. It's about the spirit that all of us that, you know, cannot be quenched and cannot be put out, and the things that we can do for, not for selfish reasons, but for, you know, the other people that we have in our lives. And that's the conclusion that he ultimately comes to, is that he's been selfish. The takeaway line from the movie for me is where he says, "This rock has been waiting for me my whole life."
Oof. Yeah, because there's so many other films that line could have been said, and you would hear us go, "Oh, come on!"
Yeah.
And that's not the case. And the other thing that I waved on this one is I've always had an issue with seeing the actual person in the last scene.
Yeah.
You know, numerous biopics have done this over the years, and the way it's set up, and because it follows the style, I don't want to give too much away visually, but there's a scene involving a bunch of people on a couch.
Yeah.
And it kind of falls into the style of the film, and it really, really works. So yes, go see this. It's I know it's not Thanksgiving just yet, and well, Burlesque opens next week. So go check this out. It's finally in Indianapolis.
See it before Thanksgiving. Don't carve the turkey and then go see it.
That's right. Yeah. Or the Eli Roth trailer from Grindhouse called Thanksgiving. There will be carvings. So no, definitely go check this out. This is right so far, and I know it's not even December, but this is already on the top 10 list of the year. Okay, the latest milking of money from Warner Brothers. It's part one of Harry Potter 7, or Harry Potter and the, what is it, Half Moon
Harry
Bay.
Potter and the Deathly Hallows,
Deathly
Part 1.
Deathly Hallows, Part 1.
Required to refer to it as such every single time we reference it.
Yes.
Oh, is that what the sharpshooters with the WB logo outside the window were saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
By the way, Hallows is not a word. It's another one of those things that J.K. Rowling just made up.
She's good that way.
Yep. That's a word now.
She could blow her nose with $100 bills.
By the way, did you see that refudiate is now a real word? They added
no.
It.
No.
Yes. Yes, they added it to the dictionary.
Wow.
Meaning?
It was one of those things.
To refudiate.
Actually, well, Google it and look it up. Because you know, the guy actually said like, you know, like it's obviously somewhere between... Man. Repudiate and whatever other word she was trying to use there.
Oh, careful.
Basically, saying it was like means like reject.
You're the guy that watches the spelling. Could you use that in the word in the sentence? Yeah, repudiate is a hard word to spell. play the Potter audio.
Okay, hang on.
I got it. Here we go. No sign of him, my lord.
Harry Potter. The boy who lived. Come to die.
something worth living for.
I have yet another beef with a trailer involving a Warner Brothers picture. Last month, I talked about the mishandling of the film Hereafter, making it seem like a horror film when in fact it's not. Guess what? That connection, that head-on-head collision between Daniel Radcliffe and Ralph Fiennes, not happening in this film, folks. It's not until next summer.
Nope.
No, this is what we call in my world, a stepping stone film.
Yeah.
Or as I like to think of the first half hour, Harry Potter is the fugitive, and instead of Daniel, instead of Tommy Lee Jones, we have Ralph Fiennes and with no nose, looking for every outhouse, windhouse, hair house, and wizard house for this kid. I've always thought that the Potter films, even the Chris Columbus ones, have been consistently good to really good. And this was the first letdown for me. And I think part of it is because they made two parts out of it. The fact that the first hour is The Fugitive and the second hour kind of turns into Ron Weasley as Othello with really no end. I mean, the film just kind of stops and says, "See you next summer, suckers." And, I was really kind of put out by this.
Yeah, I don't know. I have not read the books, but I understand that
we don't review books here, so we don't have to.
I understand the last book is a honkin', isn't it? Like 800 pages.
Honkin'?
Honking.
A lot.
It's honkin' big.
Okay, that's also in the dictionary.
And very plot dense, as the Potter books tend to be. So I don't really have a problem with them splitting it up if they feel like they can actually. You know, I'd rather see two and a half Harry Potter movies that feel like they're paced well rather than one 3.5 hour ones that just.
I would have preferred that because now they better. Everybody, I'm going to retweak a line from Arlie Emery in Full Metal Jacket. That second film better do something, better crap Tiffany cufflinks. It better be, you know, I want fireworks to be shooting out of the hinders of everybody in that. When you have some of the finest British actors in the world and they get one, maybe two scenes. And do nothing, Ralph Fiennes being the exception because he's still creepy as hell. But that's just a waste of resources. Thank you for that term, Elizabeth. It's just a real waste. And I've always liked more the story of the kids than all the hocus pocus. And by the way, I'm sorry, the kids are 30 now.
Yeah.
They have beards except for Hermione. But the fact that they're in the woods and there's a little bit of a jealousy triangle going on, which still could have been a lot shorter. But that's starting to wear a little bit. I can't believe I'm saying this, but let's get on with it.
Yeah. Well, they're all grown up except for Daniel Radcliffe, who's
too busy being Equus.
No, he's still shorter than Emma Watson. And I was watching.
What's wrong with that?
Some of the scenes where they had like carefully frame it, you know. So
they had the Alan Ladd Memorial Box.
And what's the who plays Rupert Grint? Man, he's like towering over Daniel Radcliffe now.
And that's actually probably his best performance because he had a little more to do than just look like redheaded Shaggy.
Yeah, well, I agree with you in general. I like the movie. For me, the last Harry Potter movie was the big letdown just because it was trying to build up to this, you know, building up to the great big showdown with Voldemort, and yet the movie was so obsessed with, you know, who's dating who and who's snogging who and all this teenage love puppy stuff that just drove me crazy. I was like, that should have been in about the fourth movie. You don't want to be building up to all the dark Sturm and Drang stuff and have all this, you know, cute flirtation junk. That's I really didn't care for the last movie. And this one here, I like that they kept all that, you know, tamped down. What's Ron's sister's name? Ginny Weasley?
Yes.
You know, she gets one kiss and then boom, she's out of the rest of the movie. Don't see her anymore. I did feel about that towards the end there where they just sort of are ginning up this whole, you know, Ron versus Harry for Hermione's affections thing, just totally out of left field. It's just, well, we need something to occupy this space here for a while because they're, as you say, the fugitives and literally out in the wasteland wandering around.
Right.
But in general, the ending is abrupt. I don't think there was any way they were going to really fix that without splitting the movies.
There have been other stepping stone films that have had, like the second Lord of the Rings, I think, had a smoother transition as far as ending. The Dark Knight, I think, is kind of the same way.
Yeah.
I think it almost damn near felt like, well, you know, we're just going to cut the film in half and we'll save the other half for next year.
Well, I'll tell you why I like this movie more than some of the previous ones. I've kind of liked a couple of them. There was one in there, I can't remember which one it was now, maybe the fourth or fifth, that I thought was actually pretty darn good. I like this one because, you know, first of all, as I pointed out in my review, Hogwarts School, which has been absolutely, you know, the epicenter of all the movies, not mentioned, seen, glimpsed anywhere. They don't ever go to Hogwarts. They don't ever talk about Hogwarts. No Hogwarts. And for me, up through about the fifth movie, even through the last movie, you know, the movies were really stuck in this grind of, you know, it's a new year at Hogwarts.
It's the paper chase.
Yes, and there's a new dark arts teacher, and there's some new nefarious force that's threatening the school that will turn out to be Voldemort or one of his henchmen.
You can't say his name.
And
oh, shut up! Jeez, we're beyond that.
There's a new magic item, you know, a time turner, a marauder's map.
Wasn't that the same thing in Prince of Persia? No,
yeah, it's
a dagger, right?
It's almost like playing Dungeons and Dragons when you were 15 years old. It's like your magic item is, you know, roll your dice. It's a marauder's map.
I thought it was more like roll seven, walk.
Yeah.
Roll seven, walk more. Yeah. Roll eight, think about what you're doing when you walk.
Yeah. Now, for people who were at the screening, I was, you know, making my one big complaint about the whole J.K. Rowling thing, and we've gotten a bunch of talk back on our website from people criticizing me for this. So let me.
Oh no! First the auteurs, now you're doing J.K. Rowling.
I'm going
to
go after
knocking
her
to the dirt.
I'm not impressed. I think she's got a great imagination. I don't think as a storyteller she's very true to her own stories. You know, the movies don't stick to their own logic. It's like with these spells or these magic items, she's always writing new back doors for her characters. It's like they, you know, we'll put people into a bind, and then I'll create some new magic item or some new piece of lore that I haven't mentioned before that will be the way out of this. And so, I mean, I said it's her writing is not airtight in that she does not stay true to the logic of her own setup. So she'll set something up saying, here are the parameters, and then she just expands the parameters a little bit more.
You're a troublemaker, you know that?
Well,
you
I'm a troublemaker.
You inflict the comforted and comfort the afflicted or something like that.
Well, I mean, I just don't like it. To me, it's sloppy. I mean, like, you know, the last two movies, they started doing this thing, apparating, which is a spell to instantly teleport from wherever you are to wherever you want to go. Now tell me, why in the whole wizarding world would anybody climb on a broom, get on that stupid train to Hogwarts, or do any of that stuff when you can just teleport wherever you want to go?
You wouldn't.
Or a big glass elevator.
And I've had people writing on the thing, well, no, there's a rule that says you can't apparate before you're 17. Or that
you have to get a license. Oh,
or you can't you can't apparate actually to Hogwarts because there's anti-apparate spells cast on. I said, okay, so they teleport to right in front of the front door of Hogwarts. The point is, once some wizard created the teleport spell, no wizard anywhere would ever use a broom ever again.
We actually got it, and God bless the person who posted it, but it was a total Trekkie comment. Everyone knows you can't apparate until you're 17 and get a license.
Was this person wearing pants when they submitted the information?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, or even the Deathly Hallows. The Deathly Hallows are a trio of new magic items, a wand, a cloak, and a stone, which are absolutely pivotal to the whole wizarding world and will end up being the how they destroy the Horcruxes to kill Voldemort.
And Billy Mays is selling it.
And yet, through six movies, they have never mentioned these three Deathly Hallows ever before.
You know what? They were in development.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. They had and then it finally got a soft opening, you know, and then a major grand opening.
That's what I mean. Like, imagine if in the Lord of the Rings, you know,
have to bring up. You know what? The Lord of the Rings movies are still going on. But
no,
go on, it's all right.
The third one hasn't ended.
Oh, wait, here comes the 17th ending.
Well, I was making all these jokes at the end of this movie. I was like, imagine that Sam and Frodo are climbing the slopes of Mount Doom, you know, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, a new army of elves drops out of the sky and they have, you know, the well of Kilgard, and, you know, she's constantly creating new things, new history, new lore, and it's cheap storytelling.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
So here's what I thought of the film anyway.
Otto, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
Okay, we're going to take a short break while we get flooded with hate emails and blogs from everybody. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. You're hearing music from Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1. So that's our break music for today. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment or venom to send down Chris's way, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Christopher Lloyd and Joe Shearer of the Film Yap are here. Just causing all kinds of mischief, which is what we love here.
Instigators.
Screw you, Harry Potter.
go see Equus, by the way, while we're at that. All right, new on DVD and Blu-ray this week. Yes, I get to do this bit again. No, it's not a documentary, the Who concert documentary. It's The Kids Are All Right, or as I still call it, the family film of 2010. Not a film to take your family to, but it's the family film of 2010 with Julianne Moore, Annette Bening, as a lesbian couple who finally meet the sperm donor of their dreams. And he looks a lot like Mark Ruffalo. And ladies, don't you wish all... Nah, let's move on. And the girl from Alice in Wonderland is in this as well. So here's some audio.
Hey, Bug.
Don't be back late.
I know.
Come give us a hug before you go.
Hugs.
Hug her. That's what she's there for. Have you thought anymore about making that call?
That could really hurt Mom's feelings.
How can you not even be curious about it?
Each of my moms had a kid with your sperm.
Like in both of them.
Uh-huh, like in gay.
Right on.
Cool, I
love lesbians.
Great.
I get it. He's their biological father and all that crap. Like, we're not enough or something?
I never thought they'd use my stuff.
Why not? I'd use it.
Donor dad? Stone Cold Fox. Is he single? First of all, ew.
We met him, and that's cool. And now we can move on.
I want to see him again.
You do?
You do?
So great to meet you.
Hi. Go easy on the wine, hon. It's daytime.
Okay. Same goes for the micromanaging. Okay.
Bud, you too, me.
I was a resident, and Jules had an emergency.
My tongue was numb,
and I told her to relax,
and then
my tongue started working again.
Oh, my God.
The plan was to limit his involvement.
You're not going to stick that, bro.
He's not a father. He's our sperm donor.
I just keep seeing my kid's expressions in your face.
Really?
Really?
I feel like he's taking over my family.
Oh, wow. Okay.
What's that look you're giving me?
That's no look. That's just my face.
Driving home on a motorcycle. This is something I just never allow.
Mom, I'm 18 years old. I've just felt so far away from you lately.
Why'd you donate sperm?
It just seemed like a lot more fun than donating blood. Hey, I'm glad I did.
Marriage is hard. Two people, year after year. Sometimes you stop seeing the other person.
To an unconventional family.
Yeah, Kobe asked off air if this was a good artificial insemination comedy, and I said it does not count. It does not belong in the same boat as The Switch or The Backup Plan, both of which I've seen. I see films so you don't have to, ladies and gentlemen, and these guys do the same. This was a lot of fun. Besides the one flaw, the one flaw I can think of the film, of course, is a moment involving Julianne Moore and Mark Ruffalo, which would be fine, I think, in any other picture, except it's the it hints at all a woman needs is a guy and everything will be fine. There's a particular Facebook friend of mine, Kat Cora, who took great offense to that, and she's kind of right. I mean, it's the Mark Ruffalo character gets involved with a lesbian couple that have been together for a long time, yeah. And kudos for having a film about a long-term relationship. This is not a comedy where they wind up getting married. This is a couple that have been together for a long time.
Yeah, like 20-something
years.
Yeah,
Julianne Moore is the flake, Annette Bening is the uptight kind of matriarch of the house, for lack of a better comparison, with the two older kids. Ruffalo kind of brings back the shaggy dog persona that got him on the map. It was very reminiscent of You Can Count on Me,
yeah.
But he's really good doing that. So it's a lot. I enjoyed it.
I didn't have a problem with the whole. I mean, it's no big secret. I think they're giving it away in the trailers. Is the Julianne Moore character and the Mark Ruffalo character, you know, have a little liaison,
yeah,
or two or five. I didn't really have a problem with it because, you know, the Julianne Moore character is, you know, represented as being flighty, as someone who's like, you know, moves from one thing to another
in the
her
moment.
Life.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much, you know, like, you know, in terms of her work and in terms of her, you know, her emotionality. So the idea that she would just sort of do this on the spur of the moment, I didn't really have a problem with that. I don't think it was trying to represent that, you know,
all
a good
need,
lesbian needs
a guy.
Is,
okay, all
is
right, fair
a guy or at least some
anything.
Yeah. I believe Kevin Smith had a term for that in Chasing Amy,
which we don't think we can't bring that either. Oh. We're giving Kevin Smith a rest. We didn't play the DVD intro. It's okay, Kobe. I'm just kidding. It's all right. It's all right. But no, this was a film that actually it played quite a bit here in Indianapolis, which is saying something, and hopefully more people will check this out on DVD.
Yeah, great performance by Annette Bening.
It's really nice seeing her pop up more and more.
And it's really interesting the way it's constructed. And the Annette Bening character, Nick, I believe is the character's name, you know, it's kind of presented as the heavy at the beginning, the hard case, the persnickety one.
Right.
She's very much, you know, sort of cautious about the whole Mark Ruffalo coming into their lives thing. And so, you know, there is very much, you know, criticizing this character. But over time, there's kind of things flip on their head. And we see, you know, that the Mark Ruffalo character, he's sort of emotionally a renter, not a buyer.
Yes. That's a good way of putting it.
But I stole it from Roger Ebert. That's why it's so good.
Now you see, now you owe him money.
Yeah.
Jeez. All right. So, yeah, go check this out if you didn't get a chance to see it. So it's what we're checking out.
Now that was a good movie.
Okay, we're going to go quite the opposite way. Well, we have The Last Airbender, and it has to be called that because Avatar was already taken. Yeah. It's based on a Nickelodeon show that my kid doesn't watch, and it's really okay. Do we have audio for this?
Yeah, we do.
Let's play some of it.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. Some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Okay, that's enough of that. That's
please
enough of that.
Stop, please.
Yeah, let's stop that. I remember when we saw this, how a bunch of us, we generally don't huddle into a group and tell each other what we think of our thoughts. We go and read or listen or what have you. But there, every now and then, when it's a, I think it's a unanimously good film or a unanimously bad film, we can read each other's faces. And we all had this kind of look of, oh my God, what was that? Now, and I think I was the kindest of the lot. I thought it was pretty bad, but I didn't think it was the worst film of the year. And there's still about a month to go. I think it was very wooden, very dull. Another argument that not everything needs to be in 3D. And oh, I guess I should say thank you for Warner Brothers for not putting Harry Potter in 3D.
Yes.
They could have, but they didn't. But it was, you have a young cast that are supposed to carry this kind of epic action film. And I've never seen the TV show, and I don't review TV shows because it's a film show. And these kids were kind of in over their heads, and they're inexperienced and wooden. And, you know, there wasn't that many thrills, especially when you have earth, wind, and fire, mm-hmm. not the band, the elements involved in this. I mean, this was a huge letdown, but I still think The Happening is the worst M. Night Shyamalan film by far.
I spared myself the pain of The Happening, but I cannot imagine.
You should watch it and come back to us.
Yeah,
on
I cannot imagine it being worse than this. I said, you know, Tai Chi is a wonderful exercise.
But you don't need the $100 million budget to make it.
Yes, exactly. But it's not a very good fighting style when you take 3 seconds to get yourself in position to make your move, and your enemy stands there and waits for you to finish your machination.
It's a martial arts film, don't you know that? They're supposed to stand in a circle and come at you one at a time.
Yeah,
Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan taught you anything?
Yeah, but at least there's some. I believe that Jackie Chan can tie somebody up with a jacket, but that doesn't mean the guy's going to stand there for 30 seconds and wait for him to get his jacket unzipped and off.
And then throw wind at you?
Yeah. And as an aside, I have never watched the show myself. I also heard of a lot of people say it's a very good, the series is very good.
For 30, what is it, 30 or 60 minutes, do we know?
I think it's 30, yeah. But it's,
so
it's
good in 30-minute chunks as opposed to.
Yeah, yeah. But to me, it all falls on M. Night for making a dark, I don't mean dark as in tonally, I mean dark visually.
Hard to watch.
Yeah, the final.
Can somebody light this thing so we can see it?
And then you have the glasses on, which make it even that much darker.
Yeah,
right.
And not to mention the fact, like you said, not a single 3D effect in the film. We're watching these glasses, or putting these glasses on, that personally gave me a headache, which all it does basically is allow you to not see just that much more.
So are you still pushing this as worst film? Are you pushing this as worst film?
I am. When I reviewed,
you still got a month to go.
until somebody proves me wrong, I'm going to continue to go with this.
Did you watch Grown Ups?
I did see Grown Ups. I didn't think it was that terrible.
It wasn't that terrible. Yeah, just lazy as hell.
I think I kind of feel the way you feel about this, about Grown Ups. I'm like, it was lazy. They didn't do anything, but whatever. You know, it's Adam Sandler and his buddies hanging out. You know, giving each other a hard time, whatever.
And a hard time.
but this one, to me, was aggressively bad. There were plot holes everywhere. I even started my review. I don't know if you remember. I started my review, Last Airbender, How Do I Loathe Thee?
Let me count the ways.
Yes, my review, the rest of my review, I think, was 25 reasons why I didn't like it.
Yeah, could you rattle off a couple?
I think a couple of them were, of course, it was not in 3D. I mentioned the thing about you couldn't see anything. I mentioned the thing about it takes 10 minutes for anybody to throw a punch. and then not to mention the plot holes, the fire. There's a fire guy, or for these fire guys, these firebenders, who apparently have to have fire around them that they can harness. Well, my thought is, why don't the water guys or the wind guys or the earth guys dump dirt or wind or water on the fire, put it out, and then just, like, kick the guy in the crotch and be done with it?
I don't know.
I was told in the cartoon series it doesn't work like that. They can generate fire.
And you're not allowed to kick kids in the crotch on that channel.
All the bad guys were adults, right?
So they're okay.
Yeah, it's okay. And of course, a kid kicking a guy in the groin is
fun. Wait, what about Robert? Didn't Robert Downey Jr. groin punch a kid in Due Date, or was that in the throat? Or in the chest?
I think it was like a gut punch.
Oh, fine. Yeah. All right. I stand corrected.
That was actually really funny.
It was actually one of the funnier things in that moment.
Yeah, yeah. The funniest thing in this film, I should say, was nothing.
see what he did there? He set you up, and then he hit you with that one. So here's what we think of this film.
Because it's garbage, and the editor that let it come out is garbage. So get your facts straight.
Well done, Covey.
Thank you.
By the way, he did mention to us before we went on the air that he was doing that while you were in the
other
room.
That's what I was laughing about earlier.
Oh, that's good. See, you're a part of the show as well. All right. Got some old movie titles and some re-releases, reissues. I didn't get a chance to mention this last week, but this is a must-have. I know because I have them. Mystery Science Theater Collection Volume 19. Yeah, 19 with... We just made fun of bloggers and people like with the gypsy figurine that I'm very excited about having. But this collection, this is solid. There's Devil Fish, and there's Devil Doll, but honestly, I don't remember either one of those. I think they're from the I don't know if they're from the sci-fi era, but the other two films are Ed Wood's Bride of the Monster with Bela Lugosi and Robot Monster. Yes, the film with a gorilla space helmet. Human guy. This is all kinds of awesomely bad stuff. So
if you didn't get 1 through 18, get 19, right?
Yes, you can. No. So we'll get through those. Chris, you recently, I know this week, Avatar. Remember we said don't buy Avatar when it comes out on DVD and Blu-ray last year, earlier this year, because there's nothing to it, and they're waiting for you to get this, and they got it. You got the special Uber edition Blu-ray, correct?
I did. And
are you still watching it?
No time. So James Cameron is sort of infamous for this now, is that he'll put out a very bare bones disc, and then some point, you know, in this case it was just, I guess, like 7 or 8 months later, in some cases even a year or two later, he'll come out with these super duper director's cut with all sorts of cool stuff. He's done this for, I think, pretty much every movie since The Abyss, with the exception of
Piranha.
Piranha 2.
I'm sorry.
Titanic. He has not done the super duper director's cut of Titanic that he always threatened.
I thought, but didn't he put out a colossal edition?
There is a bigger edition,
but not a director's cut.
No,
he's too. Remember, he was too busy. He was going to put it in 3D until he remembered. He said that he was making fun of other filmmakers for putting their movies in 3D.
Yeah.
So
you may not even remember that they actually did a theatrical reissue
with the extra
eight minutes. And then the DVD Blu-ray comes with another, I think, 16. So the total runtime is right at 3 hours.
So we get more Dances with Smurfs.
Yeah. And they have a really cool thing on there. So, of course, it actually has all three versions. You can sit there and watch the theatrical version, the theatrical re-release, or the super duper one. And also has a really cool function where you can just literally press a button and say, I just want to watch the new stuff so I can see what's new.
Ah, very good.
I love
good.
That. That was
that's
a great
good.
Feature.
Okay, that's good.
And just... you can go on the Film Me Up, and I sort of cataloged all the new stuff that's on there. Literally days worth of material. You could not, I mean, unless you wanted to sit there and watch it for 24 hours in a row. You
when
not
you're not
get
writing nasty letters of the Film Me Up for film sociology.
I mean, everything from the complete script, you know, which you can frame by frame go through.
Wait, but the complete script, isn't it, what, 12 pages? blue people are bad, and or no, white people are bad, and blue people are good. And there's running and frolicking and kissing, and Sigourney dies. Credits.
Yes.
Okay, that's about it.
Spoiler alert.
But yeah, just tons of stuff. You know, making of that's like an hour and a half long. Animatics. You know, casting things. Just amazing, amazing stuff. So
this is now go and get it.
One thing though is the only extra that the first edition of video came out with was a digital copy of the film. And for some reason, that's the only thing lacking in this DVD Blu-ray combo pack is they don't have a digital copy of it.
For
I don't
you
know
completist
why.
Out there, yes. See, they want you to get that one, so you'll get this one.
Yeah. Yes, but it doesn't have the digital copy.
Yeah, so suck it, hipsters. And speaking of things that one collection has this and one collection has that, the Criterion Collection, they put out two films, both I'm excited about, and one I went out and bought. The other one I'm not quite sure yet. One is Night of the Hunter with evil Robert Mitchum and curvaceous Shelley Winters and Lillian Gish as the great angelic foil. And also Criterion put out on DVD and Blu-ray Charlie Chaplin's Modern Times, which is a fun film. And the problem is I bought remember when Warner Brothers put out all the Chaplin titles?
Oh, yeah.
And they're both two disc, and I had to go, and I this is my project over the weekend, is look at the features on the Warner Brothers one, and then look at the features on the Criterion one. Are they similar? How different are they? Do I want to get them both, or do I just buy whatever? So that's kind of the dilemma I'm at. Also on Blu-ray this week, 3D Clash of the Titans, another film that really didn't need to be in 3D. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. And for those who love creepy dead eye animation, Polar Express, which I actually still like the film,
yeah,
as did Disney's Christmas Carol is out now finally on DVD and Blu-ray. You didn't like that?
The one with Jim Carrey?
Yeah. No? It's fine. It was all right. At the very least, you know what? It's two films in a decade where Gary Oldman plays a good guy. Officer Gordon and Bob Cratchit. So bully for him on that. Also on Blu-ray, finally, Shawshank Redemption, although I don't know if there's any new features on that one as well. Endless Summer, if you're in the surfing movies. The Mr. Magoo's Christmas special is on Blu-ray. There's got to be a lot more on that, because if you're going to pay $30 for a 45-minute animated special. And also there is apparently a cleaned-up version of Metropolis, which is now available on DVD.
Awesome.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to talk about Christopher Lloyd's new book and what Kobe is watching, and how you doing, Joe?
I'm sorry, your interview
with Elmore Leonard, so yeah. It was very cool. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
We're not alone.
We've got guests.
You've got what?
Guests. Guests.
Guests?
Yeah, guests. People. We've got guests coming over.
When?
Now.
Who are you?
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like, your opinion, man.
Opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one.
And welcome back to Film Sociology. I'm your host, Matthew Sosi. Christopher Lloyd and Joe Shearer of the Film Yap are here with me. Kobe Slagle's working the board.
I looked up Refudiate.
Yeah, do you work that? Make sure you give us a definition on that in a little bit.
Gotcha.
And we'll talk about what he's watching in just a little bit. Christopher Lloyd, now author of Reeling Backward, One Critic's Journey into the Cinematic Past. Now, those who have not followed his regular column, and shame on you for not doing so, you finally have it. Well, you can get it both ways. Boy, that sounded bad.
You can read the book.
you can obtain the book two different ways. For those whose VCR still blink noon, like yours truly, you can get it in print form. You can also get it online. Chris, tell us a little bit about the compilation, how it came about. You wanted to do old movie reviews, and God bless you for doing so.
Well, so it's right about 2 years ago, I started doing just watching old movies and putting them on the websites, first my own blog and then the Film Yap.
Wear pants when you blog.
I do.
Okay.
Most of the time.
Most of the time. Sometimes just pants. But it was just sort of, you know, an opportunity to advance my own cinematic education. You know, as I wrote in the introduction to the book, you know, even if, you know, you watched a movie a day for your entire life, you would still only see a small fraction of the movies that have ever been made up until now. Forget about what's being made, you know, and coming out into the theater every week. Particularly, we forget about back in the old days, the golden age of cinema. Where,
the 70s?
You know.
Sorry.
70s was pretty good, actually. But you know, where I'm like, you know, Humphrey Bogart, you know, would star in 5, 6, 7 movies a year.
Exactly. And they were, and you know, studios were pumping out a film almost, what, every month, every 2 weeks?
Yeah. I mean, some of the studios put out dozens of movies every year. And so this was just a project, and you know, I call it Reeling Backward, kind of a takeoff on Pauline Kael's movie, or Pauline Kael's book, Reeling, which is, if you haven't read it, is terrific.
Yes.
Or if you've never heard of Pauline Kael, shame on you.
You're a damn whippersnapper. Get off our lawn.
And so originally was I actually was doing two a week for about a year and a half. And unfortunately, the frenetic pace just finally got to me. I finally dialed it back to just one old movie a week that I write about.
Mm-hmm.
And so the book is a compilation of, I think, 128 essays on 128 movies.
Well done. Now, of those, how many can you give us a couple of examples of films you had not seen before and either were amazed or were underwhelmed by?
Yeah, I actually organized the book. I did not organize it chronologically. It's I think the earliest movie is 1932, and I think the most recent is 1999. They tended to kind of cluster in the 40s through early 70s.
Good for you.
But I organized them according to, and one section was exactly what that was movies that I had not seen before. So
old farts like me can stop going, what? You've never seen?
Yeah, I mean, it's from high profile movies like Grand Hotel to ones that probably even other people have never heard of. And that was one section was all, you know, movies that I just had never seen and really came to adore. The longest section is actually movies that have a very high reputation that I ended up sort of taking down a notch or two or five.
Yes, this is your crapping of the auteur discussion we've had before.
Yeah, which, you know, probably the one of the biggest ones. I mean, some of these movies I didn't hate. Some of them I actually still liked. But
you didn't put them on a high pedestal.
Yeah, I felt that they just had been really overrated. Like, you know, like Akira Kurosawa, who's a filmmaker I adore.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Which one?
Several, actually. Like Kagamusha. My general thesis is I think, you know, he rambled later in his career. He was a painter.
Yes.
And the painting became much more important to his creative process. And I think Kurosawa, the painter, ended up diminishing Kurosawa, the filmmaker, as time went on. He became so enamored with color and movement, and he would just have like these battle scenes of just, you know, 15 minutes of just marching soldiers all arrayed out in formation, and it's just like,
please don't tell me Ron is on that list.
No, Ron is not on that list.
Okay, all right.
But I found other movies like Cary Grant in this wonderful comedy called Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House, which probably most people have never heard of.
Yeah, that was a
wonderful movie.
Okay, because that was in his, you know, I shouldn't be, and let's give Cary Grant some credit. He finally just, you know what, I can't do movies where I'm chasing girls half my age.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, so I remember one of the stories was when he made Charade, he's like, I'll do it, but she has to chase me. Because I think it's less creepy that way. Although, of course, he later went and married Diane Cannon, but that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah. So if you want to buy the book, you can download it from the Kindle store on Amazon. Just go to Amazon and type in Reeling Backward, and you can find it for download. I think it's only $3.99 to download.
Or if
you're old school and want an actual print book, which is funny. I've actually sold more print books than downloads so far, even though it's much more expensive. I think it's $20.
We're old people.
You have to go to lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com. Same thing. Just do a search for Reeling Backward.
Or if you see Chris on the street, you're going to do signings? You should do these. Come on. You know what? You should go to screenings and put these in your trunk. Yes. Along with slacks and shirts, and you can sell things.
Out of the film t-shirts.
And film me up t-shirts. See?
All right. Well, if there's some bookstore out there that wants to host a signing, I'll be there.
I think you know what? I think you should walk into each screening with a stack of books. It would be very Shatner-esque. Now, Joe Scherer this week I'm very envious because he got to interview author Elmore Leonard, who's going to be speaking at Butler on December 3rd. And, of course, one of my favorite writers and a man who's had an interesting relationship with Hollywood. Now, you interviewed him for
the Indie Star.
Okay,
a version of it will appear also on the film. Yeah,
tell me you were gonna because we want to read the full version. I know they're gonna
the unabridged.
Yeah, they're gonna edit. Some people are gonna edit the other ones, but now you were able to talk to him about some of the films he's made, because some of his early treatments of some of his earlier novels, whether they were Western and crime novels, not too happy with, and it wasn't really up until like Get Shorty or Out of Sight in the mid 90s that people were finally figuring out how to handle Elmore Leonard's work.
Yeah. And I didn't talk to him a whole lot just because I read a bunch of interviews where he talked about it. We brushed over mostly the later stuff, the stuff he liked, and that's what I was interested in as well. I'm a fan of Out of Sight and Jackie Brown and
And he, you know, he talked a little bit about Tarantino, how much he liked him. But there was a story I read before I interviewed him where he talked about Stick and how it went wrong because of Burt Reynolds directing and starring in it.
Yeah, because Elmore Leonard did the screenplay on that. And I remember Newsweek magazine said Burt Reynolds takes a Elmore Leonard novel and turns it into a Mickey Spillane film.
Yeah.
I actually own a VHS copy of that. I'm wondering if I brought it for him to sign, would he hit me with it?
I don't know. He was very... very candid about the films he didn't like.
Oh, I'm sure.
The ones he did like.
I remember films like Moonshine War and Cat Chaser, which is an early Abel Ferrara picture. Yeah. He wrote the screenplay for Joe Kidd, Hombre, Mr. Majestic.
Yeah,
I remember it was a Rolling Stone said that Elmore Leonard was writing Pulp Fiction long before Quentin Tarantino ever uttered his first F.U. And this was a case where, you know, as you've seen, Kobe, with Jackie Brown, it's where characters... You can have some character development that doesn't necessarily have to move the story, so long as it's fascinating characters like they've been in Elmore Leonard's films and Tarantino, it's really, really effective.
Let me tell you also that I did mention you.
You tell us.
Yeah, I talked about our 2006 World Series stories at the theaters wearing opposite jerseys. I had my St. Louis Cardinals gear, and you were rocking.
You know what? I don't want to talk about the past. I don't think we should talk about the past. Sound familiar, Joe?
Well, yeah. It led into a discussion of him talking about Ernie Harwell, meeting Ernie Harwell.
I know. I'm just going to be a complete dweeb and wear my Tigers jersey to this lecture.
Uh-huh.
So it sounded like you were almost borderline Chris Farley show. I know I would have.
I was. Well, the beginning of the interview, absolutely, I was. I was blubbering on and on about Out of Sight and Rum Punch, you know, Jackie Brown, and, you know, I was internally telling myself, shut up, stop talking, end the sentence with a question. You know,
when you were Out of Sight? Yeah, it was awesome.
Remember Jennifer Lopez and George Clooney were in the trunk? That was awesome.
Is that how you envisioned it? I did. So, all right, so you can check it. That'll also be on the Film Me app as well.
That will be on the Film Me app. He's here, the 2nd, I believe, December 2nd.
December 2nd, sorry.
Yeah, so it'll be in the Star around that time, and then, of course, on the Film Me app probably around that time as well.
All right, Kobe, let's end it on a Kobe note.
And now it's time for What is Kobe Watching?
What is Kobe Watching?
Now, you got two more films. I gave you The Wild Bunch,
yep,
and I gave you Network, and you got through Network.
Network was cool.
And what made it cool, sir?
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
That's right. A film that's 35 years old, and guess what? It could be considered a modern movie.
Oh, yep.
Yeah. Brilliant, brilliant screenplay by Paddy Chayefsky, brilliant directing by Sidney Lumet, an Oscar for Peter Finch. Nominations for William Holden and Faye Dunaway. Oscar nomination for Ned Beatty, who it's when he dies, and it's going to be all Deliverance. That's just going to bug me to no end. And an Oscar for Beatrice Straight, also like Ned Beatty, Robert Horry, just off the bench, hits a game-winning three and sits down, and just powerful. So I'm glad you enjoyed that. Guys, your thoughts on Network?
Oh, yeah, one of the all-time greats, although someone was pointing out that the new movie Morning Glory that came out last week, which I actually liked, That it's essentially, it's like everything Network was warning against comes true in Morning Glory.
Yeah, except it's morning television. You would have an argument if it was the 6 o'clock news. I know who we love this man, but it's morning news. It's supposed to be lightweight and frothy. It was lightweight and frothy in 75.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I know, but you know, yeah, don't see. Go watch Network. And by the way, Broadcast News is getting a Criterion treatment in January. It's about time for that. So now next week, Kobe and I, well, actually this weekend, we're both in a fantasy football league.
Yes, we are.
But we wear pants when we set our teams.
Mm-hmm.
And we play each other this weekend. Our teams play each other this weekend. And so the bet is, if my team wins, you have to watch Psycho, because you don't like scary movies.
Nope.
Although we should make you watch 127 Hours. And if your team wins, I will pick another Pam Grier movie
Pam
for
Grier!
You to watch. So you can wear your dinner jacket and ascot and watch it while listening to Al Green's greatest hits. Gentlemen, thank you for coming in. Have
thank
a great
you.
Holiday. Kobe, you're in with me next week. We'll be
yep.
the only ones in the building. But Burlesque and an R-rated action movie from Dwayne Johnson and Tangled. Those are all opening. So you might want to get out of the house for a little bit. Go Lions, spare me. Here's some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz.
has spoken.
On behalf of everybody here, I'm Matthew Soucy. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. See you next week.